The meeting will come to order. This is government operations. We have a quorum present, and so I would accept the motion to approve the minutes of the February 3rd and February 8th meetings.
I haven't seen them yet. I'm just opening.
They are in the packet today.
If you'll just give me a minute, Mr. Chair, let me just look through this. I'm not going to move inclusion in the minutes of this, but we did have that issue with technology at that meeting, and I see it's not in here. We could at least note it orally, because it's the only way things are going to change around here is if we update our equipment. But
duly noted.
Minus that omission, and I won't move that they're included. I just wanted to note that for the record. I will move the minutes of the previous meeting on February 3rd.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion? And the 8th, excuse me, Representative Hornstein.
Oh, I haven't.
Are you including the 8th?
Just a minute.
Very
looks very good
today,
to me,
isn't he?
Looks very good to me. I think we've got all the testifiers.
Thank you. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails, and the minutes are approved for February 3rd and February 8th. On a personal note, I would like to have the Honorable Mayor of Albert Lea please stand up. Vern Rasmussen is with us here today. Thank you for being with us today. Also, from the council in Albert Lea, Minnow Brooks, and a past representative, Dan Dorman, who served with a few of you here. Dan, please stand. What year is Dan?
99, and then left in 2006 due to illness.
Okay.
Sick of the place.
Thank you for joining us today. It's great to have you here. Okay, we'll go ahead and move forward. Next up, we have House File 89. May I have a motion to get Representative Benson's bill before the committee? Representative Quam.
I would move that we would pass on this bill.
Okay, Representative Quam moves that House File 89 be passed and referred on to the State Government Finance Committee. Representative Benson, would you like to proceed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike Benson, State Representative, District 30B. Just to make the Chair aware, there are four amendments before the committee, two pertaining to House File 89, none of which are mine, but I will get started.
Okay, thank you.
I have some prepared notes today. I felt it important over the last couple days of testimony to note or jot down some of the testimony and some of the issues that were raised so that I might address them before we continue. Yesterday, for example, under questioning, Secretary of State Ritchie spoke to his knowledge of studies about the Indiana law, and of which this a great deal of the text in this bill, of course, comes from the Indiana law. The most referenced of the studies is one done by the Institute of Public Policy at the University of Missouri. First, the study that he referenced was, in fact, done in two off-year elections. I think he cited that they were the presidential, but they were off-year elections, one before and one after, not the presidential, as stated by the Secretary. Inferring that the study was done on a presidential election year could mislead someone to believe that the only reason for an increase was because of national candidates, but that wasn't the case. Second, there was, in fact, a 2% increase in voter participation after the photo ID bill went into effect. Third, there was no decrease in voter participation of populations that have testified in these 2 days of hearings. Mr. Chairman, committee, in fact, I have the study before me today. I just want to read the abstract to make it clear and make this part of the record. And I read, I examined the change in voter turnout across Indiana counties before and after the implementation of photo ID requirements. Overall, statewide turnout increased by about 2 percentage points after photo ID. Further, there is no consistent evidence that counties that have higher percentages of minority, poor, elderly, or less educated population suffer any reduction in voter turnout relative to other counties. In fact, the estimated effect of photo ID on turnout is positive for counties with a greater percentages of minorities or families in poverty. The only consistent and frequently statistical significant impact of photo ID in Indiana is to increase voter turnout in counties with greater percentage of Democrats relative to other counties. These findings run counter to some recent and prominent concerns that have been raised about voter identification reforms. However, these results are consistent with both existing theory on voter behavior and the most recent and reliable empirical evidence on the effects of voter identification requirements on turnout. I also heard many times, including from the Secretary, there was no evidence of voter fraud by people misrepresenting themselves. And I wish I could say this as well as one of the other testifiers. His name was Lucky. And Lucky said that felons don't announce when they commit a crime. And we presently don't have any system that will deter or detect if someone decides to lie about their identity and vote. It also had been brought out about the burden we would impose on people who have to apply for a free ID, because of the cost of producing documents to prove who they are. We live in a time that we have to produce forms of identification for just about everything we do, including services rendered from many of the other government agencies that we represent here. Should we also buy a car for everyone whose polling place is more than a mile off the bus route? I've also heard something akin to pushing of a photo ID bill being equivalent to tyranny of the majority. The highest court in the land has ruled, in fact, that it is reasonable for states to require photo ID. One of the reasons we have separation of powers is to ensure that the rights of the minority are not trampled on. I believe continuing to oppose a bill that is supported by over 80% of Minnesotans sounds more like the tyranny of the minority. I was elected to represent the will of my district, not the Secretary of State, not special interest groups. I might add, I maybe brought this up in previous, and I've already said I'm not going to repeat all those comments, but I want to add this. A poll taken on photo ID by the Rochester Post Bulletin the week before our first day of testimony resulted in 2,320 in favor and only 227 against. That's 91% in favor. Poll after poll after poll shows that there is public support. And I would dare say that on any given election, there are not 90% Republican voters. The perception of the vast majority of Minnesotans is that we have enough wrong with our current system that photo ID is needed. The League of Women Voters can hold all the public meetings they want to try to explain away the public's fear of potential fraud, but the public's perception is their reality. And I think yesterday's vote on House File 210 validates that a majority of this committee believes we need a photo ID.
No.
It is time to vote in the affirmative to grant the will of the people who sent us to do a job. House File 89 does by no means address every issue of safeguarding the integrity of the election process, but it sure gives us a good start. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Scalzi, you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, in your words, I'm part of the tyranny of the minority. Unfortunately, I'm here and you're stuck with me, so that's the way it goes. But Representative Benson, tell me now, as I look through this bill, and it says, you have to have the photo ID, and, the media, I guess, is being a little disingenuous, because what we're hearing in the media is that we would have to present a driver's license. I don't think it's quite that simple. So we're beyond the fact that we're just presenting a driver's license. What we're doing here is running it through a big government system. So you tell me, since I visited my closest DVS license department, and they told me that it would take 4 weeks to get a photo ID. In your bill, you say the Secretary of State shall provide the county auditor with the necessary equipment, et cetera, for the production of these photo ID cards. Tell me, because you also say that you only have 5 business days to produce the photo ID after you go to the polling place, you put your driver's license in, it spits it out because you've moved. How is this going to work? If it takes 4 weeks now, when there is not a big rush of people needing them, how is somebody going to get this done in 5 days? And otherwise, their vote is destroyed.
Representative Benson.
Okay. Well, that's a couple of questions. And first of all, my bill is starting at on 3225, or 3225.25, the photo identification. To satisfy the photo identification requirement in Subdivision 1, a voter must present one of the following. So it does include a valid Minnesota driver's license or identification card issued by the Department of Public Safety. But it also uses a valid United States passport, a valid voter identification card that's issued, or any other valid identification card issued by a branch department, agency, or entity. So, you know, that does help, you know, the issue with the student ID. So, the matter of the time frame and what you're referencing here in terms of the provisional balloting piece of the legislation. I'm more than willing to work with the counties on the issue with the whole idea behind the canvassing board dates. But I really do not see that it is an issue to be able to, if a person shows up to the county auditor to get a valid ID, all we're talking about here is an ID with a photo that needs to be laminated onto a correct address when the correct information is presented as far as their address. So I don't see an issue, you know, the whole idea that it's going to take 4 weeks to produce the voter identification card. It's not a driver's license, the free voter identification card at the county auditor.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you. And I don't know how the county auditor is going to do it any faster than the DVS. And the DVS has told me that it would take 4 weeks. And I frankly, that's the crux of this bill, is that you only have 5 days to do this process that may take 4 weeks. So you're telling me the county auditor then would be more efficient than the DVS License Bureau and could do this within 2 to 3 days, because we've got to get it done and then we've got to go back and get our, make sure that the provisional ballot is not thrown away. So you're telling me that the county auditor is...
First of all, I do believe, yes, I am telling you that I believe they should be able to do this process faster than the amount of time that it would take to produce one. I also got to remember that, as it's been testified already, elections don't sneak up on a person. We already have requirements that you have to register to vote at least 20 days prior to, or register at the day of the polling place and then bring in the proper. It wouldn't preclude someone registering on the day and filling out a provisional ballot.
Mr. Chair. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. But if you register on the day at the polling place, fill out your provisional ballot, but say you're a young family with little children who just moved, and you know the last thing on your mind after moving all your household goods with your first house, the last thing on your mind is to get there a month in advance because you just moved. And now you have, you go to the polls, because in Minnesota we've always been able to register on the same day. So you go to the polls, you register, and then you fill out your provisional ballot. And you're told that you better come back within 5 days with a photo ID. I'm just telling you that if the DVS can't do it in a shorter time than 4 weeks, how the heck is the county auditor going to do it within 5 business days? This is what's wrong with this bill, is that it just doesn't appear to me that it can be done. You are assuring me, I'm just asking you, you're assuring me that this new system at the county auditor is going to automatically take a day to get this photo
ID. No, I'm not assuring you that it's a one day. I'm sorry. I'm not assuring you that it's a one day turnaround, but I am assuring you that there is enough accommodation in the bill so that a person can make sure that their provisional ballot can count.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Benson. This is a healthy discussion. We obviously have some disagreements, but I appreciate you starting this discussion. I do have to say, though, I'm a little bit alarmed by your assertion. It's always tempting for any of us when we're on the, quote, right side of public opinion to claim public opinion's on our side and imply anyway that that's the way we're always going to vote. I look forward to seeing whether you keep to that principle and whether you're always going to be voting with what the state majority says. It'll be very interesting to see whether you're able to do that. I can think of many issues where I would suspect your position is not with the majority. So I think we all need to be careful about claiming that we speak for the majority and that our job here is to vote only and always the way the majority wants us to. Let me ask you about the bill in particular. Could you describe for us and for the record how absentee balloting will work in terms of the photo ID? And in particular, I'd like to see if you could discuss how it will work with our overseas folks, particularly military personnel, students, missionaries, diplomats, etc. How are they to demonstrate that they have a photo ID, this both overseas sure. and here?
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative, there isn't any change in the provisions for absentee ballot at all in this bill. So this is a requirement that when a person shows up to the poll that they have one. So they will continue to vote absentee just the way they have. So in my mind, to be honest with you, it also negates many of the concerns relative to people who have difficulty getting to the poll. They can still use an absentee ballot like they have done before.
Representative Simon.
So, Madam Chair, just if you could walk us through. So there's a Minnesotan who is serving on a submarine, and next time it comes up for air, so to speak, it's October before the election year. What does he do? How does he demonstrate that he has a photo ID sufficient to order and then fill out and return a ballot? How does that work?
Representative Benson.
Well, first of all, he would vote just exactly the way he has done in the past. And believe me, sir, I think you're probably aware that if he's on a submarine, he's already got a government issued, either federal or some kind of photo ID that would be useful in this purpose. But it requires a witness.
Okay. Isn't that... But
Representative Simon.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, that's true currently, but the person doesn't have to demonstrate or show that ID to anyway. Presumably he has one, like presumably most of us do. But if what you're saying is that that's unchanged, that it's the same way it goes right now, then that person would essentially get a preference. That person right now doesn't have to necessarily show a photo ID in order to get that ballot. Isn't that true?
I don't try.
Representative Benson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative. Bill doesn't try to be perfect and address every issue. What it tries to do is it addresses the issue of when people show up the poll that they have proper identification so that they can validate who they are to the judge who has to sit there and say, here's Steve Simon, and here's his photo ID. I can match that up with the name on the roster, and here's his picture, and they go together.
Okay, well...
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you just mentioned, and it's true, that currently right now there needs to be a witness. That maybe is akin to what Representative Kiffmeyer was saying yesterday, where one of the problems she thought with vouching was that it was faith-based. I guess I would submit to you that there are a lot of things we do, like filling out tax returns in this country, in this state, that are faith-based. We don't have Department of Revenue officials that are combing the records to necessarily police everyone, but we rely on the good judgment and goodwill of all of us to do our duty, and that is to fill out state and federal tax returns. So that, too, is faith-based, which leads me to the next question about vouching. I guess I'll ask you the same kind of question that I did with to Representative Kiffmeyer. What do you see as wrong with vouching? That's the first part. In general, why get rid of it? And secondly, what do you say to the fact that apparently under your bill and Representative Kiffmeyer's bill, to get a state ID, one of the things you could do is to go get a birth certificate. And to get a birth certificate, you may now use vouching. That right now, if I didn't have a copy of my birth certificate and didn't have a driver's license, I could go to whatever state office. And if I didn't have an ID, I could have someone vouch for me. Is that troubling to you? Do you seek to change that in the law as well? Is that faith-based to the point where you think there ought to be a change in the law?
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. I think I was about three questions in there. If I forget the first one, help me with it. But
what do you think about what's wrong with vouching?
Well, first of all, I mean, there are cases of, in fact, there's some investigating right now going on in terms of people that probably shouldn't have vouched when they did in this last election. So that, I guess that lends some credence to the fact that there is some suspicion that vouching isn't always done in the most legal manner. But from a practical standpoint, if a person is required to bring a photo ID, and we've heard testimony from election judges, it just makes the whole process go better. Here's a photo of the person, here's their address, here's their name. They pronounce their name, they're not always, I mean, it's not the quickest. It's in the same vein as all the other processes that we talked about in House File 210. This just makes that whole process easier. It makes it one where it provides greater integrity, you know, for the judge. That's my problem with vouching. I think there's absolutely more opportunity for there to be illegal acts in that case.
Representative Simon, and if this could be your last question. I have several member questions. Sure. Perhaps if you have more, you can go with the
this will be
bottom possible. Of the list again. Thank you.
So I'll skip to another issue then. And we can talk later about what you think about the birth certificate process, which exists now in present law. But just a quick mention of something in your bill when it comes to provisional ballots. As I understand it, looking on page 5, lines 4, 5, 6, and 7. As I understand the mechanics, Representative Benson, if someone comes to the poll without the proper identification, they'll have a few days to go to another place in the county and either bring the proper identification or, starting on line 5.3, sign a form under oath affirming that they are who they say they are. My question is, given that last option, not the coming back a few days later with the ID that they might have forgotten, but coming back later and talking and signing an oath, why couldn't you do as South Dakota currently does in current law and just have them do that on the spot? Why not just have them sign that form on the spot saying, you know, I don't have an ID, or I forgot my ID, or I lost my ID, or I was mugged on the way over here, or whatever it is, but I am who I say I am. Why make them wait the 5 days? If you're having an option in the bill that says they just sign a form saying that they are who they say they are, why not do it the same day, right in front of
the opportunity?
Representative
is for
Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. The opportunity is for, of course, them to provide the same level of identification as every other voter on the day of the voting. The purpose of the provisional voter, the part about provisional voting allows to make sure that the people do, their votes do count, and there is an opportunity to vote, but they still need to prove who they are.
Representative Simon?
Sorry, just I guess I'm not understanding the distinction. So we're allowing someone to sign a form. They can get out of this and have their vote count if they sign a form saying I am who I say they am, but they have to do it 5 days later or 2 days later or 7 days later. Why? Why is it punitive? Is it that that's kind of what you get for not bringing your ID, or is there some other reason why that form is good if you come in the next day, but if you sign that same oath right there at the polling place, that's not good? Why the distinction? Why the time lag? Why
the distinction of the timeline is... I'm sorry. Madam Chairman, Representative, the distinction, of course, is that we want to make sure that everybody's treated equally and that they do indeed have to bring a photo ID as the first way in order for their vote to count.
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. this is kind of going back to Representative Scalzi and some of those that have issues with moving within the state close to the time of the election, and hopefully just to kind of provide some ease to this. The law in Minnesota already states that you have to change your address within 30 days of moving in the state. Secondly, you get a yellow receipt immediately from the DMV whenever you change your address, which I have done recently, and that same day immediately got a yellow receipt. And I got my license back. They don't destroy it. It's not invalidated because of that yellow sheet. It supports that your address is being changed, but your photo ID is still valid. So in that instance, even if you went on election day and changed your address with the DMV before you voted, you still have a valid photo ID, and you still have valid proof of address from the state of Minnesota. So I hope that that just provides some ease here, that those folks that do move, even if it was election day, that they would still be able to provide a proper photo ID from the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sanders. Good point. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Benson. I have a brief question and then a brief comment. First of all, how does this affect guardians? My wife works for a group home in Litchfield. You have a fairly wide variety of disabilities. But how would this affect those people being able to vote?
Representative Benson.
They would still vote in the same way they or manner they have in the past. If their disabilities would allow them to still come to the polling place, they can vote and would need a proper ID. However, if they've voted in the past using absentee ballot because it's difficult for them to make it to the polling place, they would do it in the same way they have before. They'd fill out an absentee ballot.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Benson, so if they have a guardian, it wouldn't affect that?
No, it would not.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Just a brief comment regarding the vouching and birth certificates. I don't know that is exactly an apple-to-apple comparison. Someone who knows you for your life, who knows you since birth, is probably a little bit different than someone who may or may not know you from an apartment complex. I did have someone vouch for me in my birth certificate. Because my birth certificate says baby boy Erdahl, I had to have my aunt.
That's still your name?
Thank you.
My aunt had to vouch for me, and yes, at Customs they did shout out baby boy Erdahl.
Thank you, Representative Baby Boy. We will move on to Representative O'Driscoll.
I have no question. I'm sorry.
I
gestured in such
here.
A fashion that was completely erroneous.
All right, you must have been sending baseball signals to the committee administrator. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do want to clarify, though, for Representative Erdahl, that vouching is actually a pretty common way for people who are in group homes to show up and vote, and it can be with a guardian or it can be with one of the employees of the group homes, and this bill does eliminate that as a form of identification for voting. So just to be clear, it dramatically affects that. Whether there are ways around it, of course, is a different question. Now, my question for Representative Benson, though, is about the Minnesota Constitution. We had a little discussion about that yesterday, and you were here, I believe, so I wonder if you've had a chance to reflect on that. Again, just to summarize, Article 7 of the Minnesota's Constitution deals exclusively with the elective franchise. Section 1, the very first sentence, the Constitution says at all about voting is that if you're 18, you're a U.S. citizen, and if you've resided in the precinct for 30 days, you are entitled to vote in the precinct. So the first statement is a general statement. Then the Constitution goes on to create some limited exceptions. Whether you are a felon, whether you've convicted for treason, under guardianship, or a person who is insane or not mentally competent. So those are the exceptions. And then they have this enforcement mechanism. So the Constitution says you're entitled to vote. They create a limited number of exceptions, and then they have this enforcement mechanism in Section 3, which is an oath. So, at a time when our state's population was about the same percentage of people who were foreign-born and non-English-speaking, at the time when our population was in flux, when it was really hard to even have any kind of vital records except basic county birth records in place, a suitable way, when they wrote the Constitution for enforcing voting franchise rights, was an oath. And what you're doing in this bill and what Representative Kiffmeyer was doing in her bill was to put another layer on top of that. The Constitution says a person giving their word and swearing under penalty of a felony is good enough. And you're saying, no, it isn't good enough. You also have to show this photo ID. So do you have any concerns about the constitutionality of this bill, and the concern that by passing it, should it become law, that you're simply inviting litigation?
Representative Benson.
Madam Chair and Representative, I thought Representative Kiffmeyer gave a great answer, and in fact that we are still following the Constitution, because when you sign your name on that that roster, you are in fact signing an oath that you are who you say you are. And the photo ID is there, of course, to make sure that you are the person who you say you are. I think the language has been well litigated. It's made it all the way to the Supreme Court, both before and before the vote and after, and it's been found that it is reasonable for states to allow for photo ID to vote.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, but that's actually not quite true. There has never been a case that's tested photo ID against the provisions of the Minnesota Constitution. It's never been tested. The state of Missouri had came down one way under their constitution. The state of Indiana came down another way. You are certainly creating that possibility. And what Section 3, when it says that the legislature shall prescribe a uniform oath, says that no person shall be compelled to take any other or different form of oath. And so what they're saying is that there's an oath. You swear. And there's not supposed to be any other thing that you have to do in order to prove that you're entitled to vote, because they take it seriously. This is not a right that resides because you're a member of a group like, because you're disabled. It's not a right that you have because you're an elderly woman. And you can have a study that shows that those groups turned out and voted in equal numbers as before, or African Americans, or whatever the group is. It's an individual's right to vote. And the Constitution says that you have that right and you shall be entitled to vote, unless you're a felon, you've committed treason, you're under guardianship, or you're mentally incompetent. And then it says, in order to prove who you are, you take an oath. I would submit that the language of the Minnesota Constitution has never been tested against this. If it became law, it would certainly be tested in court, and there's a very real possibility that it would be thrown out. And it seems to me that if you want to, and you're serious about this, the way to approach it is through a constitutional amendment.
Is that a question, Representative Winkler, or?
It was a suggestion.
A suggestion. Would you like to address that or move on to the next question, Representative Benson?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. We're going to disagree on our interpretation and whether or not the Constitution allows for it. There's nothing in the Constitution about the kind of voting machine or where the precincts are going to be, and a number of things, sir. So I see this as a way to address an issue relative to the same thing that we've done in the past. What's the best way to accomplish this with the greatest integrity to maintain the public confidence in the entire election system? I don't see this as an infringement on constitutional rights. But thank you for the suggestion about the amendment.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Benson. Going back to the provisional ballots and the 5 days that you have, or 7 days that you have, to verify that you are who you say you are with the ballot. Currently, in Minnesota law, on election day, employers are required to allow their employees time off in the morning of election day to vote, and they're not supposed to get docked their pay. So if I go into vote and now I'm given a provisional ballot, do I get that same time off to go in the next 5 days to go and prove that I am, this is my identification, I am who I am, to go vote? Is that, do you envision that being part of your bill?
Madam Chair,
Representative Benson.
I guess that would be an additional incentive to get it done right before you go to the poll, wouldn't it? But no, there is no provision in offering additional time off to do that, and I would assume that person's responsibility would make it within the operating hours of the county auditor or whoever's been tasked with making sure their ballot's counted.
All right, are there other member questions? Okay, why don't we move next then to amendments? I have a stack in front of me. Does anybody want to claim any of them and move any of them? Representative Simon.
I'm sorry.
Representative Beard.
The First Amendment, Madam Chair, I have a question for staff about the issue of guardianship.
and I don't know if Matt can answer this. And I'm sorry I don't have Representative Winkler's the copy he handed yesterday of the section of Constitution was very helpful. But it seems that there is in the Constitution an exception made for people under guardianship, harking back to Representative Erdahl's comments about his wife vouching for people that she's a guardian for. Can you explain the difference in how people who are under guardianship that are actually not allowed to vote, but yet we seem to have people under guardianship that we vouch for and we allow them to cast ballots?
Mr. Gehring.
Can you rectify that for us?
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Representative Beard, the Constitution does provide the eligibility requirements for voting, which includes an exception so that you're not eligible to vote if you're under guardianship, but there are sections of statute that provide or further specify that if you're under guardianship, you only lose your eligibility to vote if the court has specifically ordered that to be removed from your rights. And so people who are under guardianship currently are allowed to vote based on that provision. So if you have been put under guardianship and the court hasn't specifically taken away your right to vote, then the statute allows you to go in and cast a ballot.
Interesting. Okay, let's ponder that as we discuss. Thank you for the explanation.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. I will claim the A2 amendment.
Okay. Representative Simon moves the A2 amendment. To your amendment, Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this comes under the category, I think, of alternatives. I mean, I think we all want the same thing. I know Representative Benson, Representative Kiffmeyer were concerned about the integrity, and I do agree to some extent that the public perception is a reality, certainly maybe not only the reality, but a reality. And I think, you know, one mark of our seriousness here, one of many, one being Representative Winkler's bill, which he's going to have on early voting, one being my bill, which you'll soon see about updating our motor voter laws. But a third possibility in terms of improvements we can make that hopefully we can agree on would be to show our seriousness by increasing the current penalties for illegally voting or registering. And that's what this amendment would do. Right now in law, it says that it's a felony, but it's of unspecified duration in terms of a sentence, and the default, therefore, is no more than 5 years and no more than $10,000. This would up it to no more than 7 years, so the ceiling would go from 5 to 7 years in prison, and the penalty ceiling would be doubled to $20,000. Now, I do realize procedurally that this would mean that the bill would have to go to another committee, I assume Representative Cornish's committee, but I think one mark of our seriousness would be to show that that we mean it when we say that voter fraud intentionally done, which this applies to, is something we take seriously no matter how many times it's done or how few. We might disagree about what the numbers are, but I think we all disagree that even one case of intentional voter fraud is too many.
Representative Benson, do you want to comment on this amendment?
Only, ma'am, that Madam Chair, that you know, I think that the wording in there is strong enough. It's felony. And I am more than happy to continue to use that word and no additional language, so I would not support the amendment.
I'm sure I'd like to ask a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. There will be a roll call. Is there any further discussion? The amendment. Clerk will take the roll.
Chair Pepin?
No.
Representative Murray?
No.
Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative Beard?
Nay.
Representative Green?
Yes.
Representative Hancock?
Nay.
Representative Hornstein?
Aye.
Representative McFarland? Representative O'Driscoll?
No.
Representative Qualm?
Nay.
Representative Sanders?
No.
Representative Scalzi?
Yes.
Representative Simon?
Yes.
Representative Erdahl?
No.
Representative Winkler?
Yes.
There being 6 ayes and 8 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. We can move on to the A3 amendment. Someone want to claim responsibility for the A3 amendment? Okay. I have a A4 amendment. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the A4 amendment.
Representative Winkler moves the A4 amendment.
Members, this is similar but much smaller to the an amendment we saw yesterday, and this simply requires that if we are going to be offering a free ID, we had better offer a free ID. And if you have to go out and spend money to get a birth certificate, to get a marriage license, or any other supporting documents in order to exercise your fundamental right to vote, then the state of Minnesota should pay for it. And so, you know, as I think we've heard extensive testimony on so far, this burden falls particularly on elderly married women or women who have been married. And in order to address some of the concerns that we've heard, we can't, you know, we're not going to buy them a car. But if they can make use of transportation resources, get down to the county auditor and get these documents in order, and then get this ID, there's not much sense in giving them the free ID, which consists of a laminated piece of paper, I gather. There's not much sense in giving them a free ID if they have to pay for the documents to get it. And so I would urge that we adopt the A4 amendment. Okay, that's it.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. I don't agree that this is that having to provide the proper identification in order to get a free ID is something that we need to address. Even the population that is stated by our representative, in most cases, are using medical services, and I'm not trying to not draw that we're talking about people over 65. There may be some in the crowd that wouldn't consider themselves older women, but I mean, we're basically talking about there are all kinds of uses. How do we apportion what part of that getting that iPhoto ID or getting the birth certificate is the state's responsibility for the photo ID when that very birth certificate is going to be used over and over again for other things? So I would not support the amendment.
Okay, is there any further discussion on the amendment?
Madam Chair, I request a roll call, please.
Representative Winkler requests a roll call. There will be a roll call. Clerk will take the roll.
Chair Pepin?
Nope.
Representative Murray?
No.
Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative Beard?
Nay.
Representative Green?
Yes.
Representative Hancock?
Nay.
Representative Hornstein?
Yes.
Representative O'Driscoll?
No.
Representative Quam?
Yes.
Representative Sanders?
No.
Representative Scousing?
Yes.
Representative Simon?
Yes.
Representative Erdahl?
No.
Representative Winkler?
Yes.
Representative McFarland?
There being six ayes and eight nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. I have an A5 amendment in front of me. Would someone like to move that?
Madam Chair, I'll move the A5 amendment.
Representative Winkler moves the A5 amendment to your amendment.
Madam Chair, I'd like to start out with a question for Representative Benson. It's my understanding that this bill does not have a companion that's traveling in the Senate or has been introduced yet in the Senate, and neither, and you may not be able to speak for Representative Kiffmeyer's bill, but House File 89 doesn't have a companion bill that's been introduced in the Senate?
Representative Benson.
No, it doesn't at this point. I mean, it's over there, it's in a jacket, but it's not been dropped in the hopper.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, people might wonder why I'm offering this campaign finance amendment to this bill, which isn't directly related, but the reason is because the governor said unequivocally last week that he would not sign any election reform bill unless it included greater disclosure for campaign finance reporting, and he specifically said that he would not sign any bill without quarterly reporting. And so I think this amendment is actually offered in the spirit of getting this bill signed, potentially, by Governor Dayton by including the one requirement that he had, which is quarterly reporting. And Representative Benson, I guess I hope that you'll say that you support this provision, because otherwise I think we're just wasting our time. If we have bills that are, you know, we've taken three full days of committee time almost on this issue, an issue that is one that the majority party seems to be fixated on year after year, We're devoting all this time and energy on this photo ID issue, and unless we're actually ready to take the steps necessary to move it forward and get it signed into law, we should just stop. And so if you're not willing to accept this amendment, Representative Benson, I think we have to really question what the point of pursuing these bills is at all. And if you don't accept it, perhaps we can get back to balancing the budget and improving the economy, which is, I think, what just about everyone said to their constituents they were going to do here.
Representative Benson, to the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Winkler. I would be happy to talk with you more about your amendment. Maybe we could walk over to the governor's office together and find out if indeed if that's all it would take, we could get it signed. But I think for this hearing this morning, I'd have to say that it really doesn't fit in this bill, and I would say I would like for that be a no vote.
Representative Winkler's moved the A5 amendment. Any discussion? Representative Winkler.
Well, Madam Chair, first of all, I request a roll call.
Representative Winkler has requested a roll call. There will be a roll call.
And second, Madam Chair, this is the committee that needs to address this issue. If this amendment is in this language is ever going to go into this bill, it should be done in this committee. And so I don't know really. Maybe the bill would be re-referred to government operations if at some point, you know, when we wander over to the governor's office together and we get an appointment and we work this all out, I hope this bill will at least come back to this committee to deal with this particular issue.
I look forward to it.
Representative Benson.
Representative
Riddle.
The governor will be in my office at 2 o'clock this afternoon. If you two want to drop by and work this out there, I'll help.
Representative Winkler, I think you could also put this on the House floor if you so chose to put this on.
Madam Chair, I can't imagine that any kind of germaneness motion might come up on the floor as a result of this amendment.
Well, that is always possible, Representative Winkler. Okay, hearing no further discussion, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Pepin.
No.
Representative Murray.
No.
Representative Nelson.
Yes.
Representative Beard.
Nay.
Representative Green.
Yes.
Representative Hancock.
Nay.
Representative Hornstein.
Aye.
Representative McFarland.
No.
Representative O'Driscoll.
No.
Representative Qualm.
No.
Representative Sanders.
No.
Representative Scalzi.
Yes.
Representative Simon.
Yes.
Representative Erdahl.
No.
Representative Winkler.
Yes.
There being 6 ayes and 9 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. That is all the amendments I have in front of me. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in an answer to Representative Sanders, thank you for that. I understand the driver's license deal because I just had mine renewed as well. And so we're assuming then this young couple that had little children and moved have done that, and that would be proper. But for somebody who didn't have a driver's license, that still would be a barrier if it were a 4-week time, which Representative Sanders says it's not going to be 4 weeks. But that still would be a barrier to someone who did not have the driver's license with the corner cut off and the yellow sheet. But thank you for that.
Representative Benson, would you like to sum up your bill before we take a final vote?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. As I stated before, the House File 89 is not the perfect bill in attempting to close every loophole, but it is a great first step in making sure that the public confidence is returned in the integrity of our voting system by making sure that when people come to the polls, they can be identified by a photo ID and that can be matched up with a registration roster. I take to heart the things that were said by Representative Simon in making sure that that we're not always on the side of just the minority, that there are issues that are important to everyone that sometimes would cause us to take a harder look at the minority point. I don't believe that this is one of those issues. That I think that in the long run, the state will benefit, the minority community will benefit, those who even oppose it will benefit from a greater integrity in the system. In fact, if statistics are borne out and they carry over from the Indiana election, maybe even my colleagues in the DFL will benefit. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Nelson.
I'd like to request a roll call.
A roll call has been requested by Representative Nelson. There will be a roll call. Representative Quam renews his motion that House File 89 be recommended to pass as amended and be referred to the State Government Finance Committee. Clerk will take the roll.
Chair Pepin.
Aye.
Representative Murray.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative Beard.
Aye.
Representative Green.
No.
Representative Hancock.
Aye.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative McFarland.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Yes.
Representative Quam.
See.
Representative Sanders.
Yes.
Representative Scalzi.
No.
Representative Simon.
No.
Representative Erdahl.
Yes.
Representative Winkler.
No.
There being 9 ayes and 6 nays, the motion does prevail and the bill is passed. Thank you, Representative Benson. And that puts to rest our 3-day...
It's not rest.
In government operations, we put to rest. Representative Westrom, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
This is picking up.
Okay, Representative Hancock has a motion for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move House File 203 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register.
Okay, Representative Hancock moves House File 203 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. Please proceed with your bill.
Madam Chair, I think we have one small amendment to add to the bill. If somebody would be willing to offer that or move it,
yes.
That would get the bill. But I can talk to that once that's the case or whatever you prefer.
Okay. Representative Hancock, would you like to make a motion?
Yes. Madam Chair, I'd like to move amendment to House File 203.
Okay. Please state your amendment.
Madam Chair, what the amendment does is it came up in the Civil Law Committee. Dan Larson from the Rural Counties Association suggested that the language we had would only apply to the first year of a rule. This would have the threshold of $10,000 for the first year or each year after, is essentially what the amendment would do.
Oh, it's the A2 amendment. Okay. Is there any discussion to the A2 amendment? All those in favor of the A2 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. Amendment does prevail. Please proceed with your bill.
Madam Chair, what House File 203 does is has the legislature reeling back some of the authority we delegate frequently every year we're in session. What it would do is if a new rule that we pass authority to an agency to write and do rulemaking on is going to come back and cost over $10,000 to an entity in Minnesota, a person or entity, the legislature would have to reapprove that rule or enact that rule before it would go into effect and affect citizens in the state of Minnesota. A very similar bill to this passed in 2003, virtually identical to this bill, that Representative Seifert carried, and it passed the House of Representatives with only about 15 negative votes, and it passed unanimously in the Senate. Unfortunately, Governor Plenty vetoed it at that time, and so this is a new attempt to take that legislation that should have been enacted, in my opinion, 7 years ago, and get it enacted now. As people hear about regulatory reform or reining in regulations that get costly and burdensome to citizens and our constituents across the state, this will bring back legislative oversight to rules that we pass. Generally, we pass laws that are an authorizing or an environment for an agency to go forward with rulemaking. No one has what they call an organic statute. And so when we delegate that authority, this will just simply rein it back in or bring it back to us for review if those rules are going to be costly to the citizens of the state of Minnesota, and many times costs that maybe weren't anticipated or weren't known at the time that we would have passed a law or a rule or a change from the in the legislature. Lastly, there is a severability clause that we've added to this upon the suggestion of some, and what this would do is simply if there's a components of the rule that weren't costly or didn't cost caused it to go over the $10,000 threshold, the administrative law judge could implement those and only suspend or hold up the ones that didn't have legislative authority that were going to cost over $10,000. I'll stand for questions, and Dan Larson from the Rural Counties is here to testify briefly if we have time, and Mike Hickey from NFIB. Otherwise, Madam Chair, you decide based on the clock.
Okay, Representative Beard has a question, and then after we get done with member questions, we'll have the witnesses up. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Westrom, just to be clear, first of all, I saw the Florida legislature pass a veto override of a bill like this on a vote. I think there were 118-6 or something. It was a very popular bill on a bipartisan basis, so I'm glad you're moving ahead with this. But just to be clear, the $10,000 number, is it an aggregate number for any one person or entity, which is what it kind of looks like here? Or if, say, it affects 20,000 people a dollar each, does that cross the threshold? Or can you bring some clarification on what triggers, how the $10,000 threshold is triggered?
Representative Westrom.
Representative Beard, the former scenario is how I intended to read, and I think it reads, if it's a dollar to impact 20,000 people, it's going to go into effect just like it does now. If it's a $20,000 per entity or individual, then it's going to come back for legislative approval.
Madam Chair, thank you for the clarification.
Thank you, Representative Beard. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Westrom, you did mention that the 2003 vote in the House, but it's my recollection that I think the governor vetoed that bill, and I didn't have a chance to look at call up his veto letter, but do you know the reasons why the governor vetoed this bill in 2003?
Representative Westrom.
Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, I haven't reviewed the veto message recently, but as I recall, it revolved around concern of giving up executive branch authority. I dare might say he had only been governor for less than a year, and maybe it was a rookie mistake, Representative Hornstein.
Representative Hornstein?
Thank you for that, Madam Chair and Representative Westrom. Could you give me maybe an example or two of a rule that you have concern about that would fit under this bill?
Representative Westrom.
It's been lately an issue.
Representative Hornstein, I might ask Mike Hickey to come up and talk a little bit about this as well, but an example in recent memory or history around here were the feedlot rules that in the late 90s were being promulgated by the legislature and pushing the MPCA to implement them. A long story short, those rules turned out that they were going to start costing farmers, all sizes of farmers, thousands and tens of thousands, in some cases hundreds of thousands of dollars to comply with, to just modify their operation that was already in existence. We eventually passed a one-time moratorium, if you will, or a provision that said those rules can't go into effect until there's cost share dollars that the state will pay for any cost share, any projects that are going to cost over $10,000. I think it was $3,000. Representative Erdahl was actually, I think, active in some of that. Representative, former Representative Ness, $3,000. I think on a small operation, feedlots under 3,000 or 300 animal units, and I think it was $10,000 if it was larger, middle to larger size operations. That's an example of a rule that would have not gone into effect had we had this rule in place and not had to have special legislation to do it. But it's those types of rules that all of a sudden the rules are in and everybody said, holy cows, we can't afford this on our farming operation or whatever entity it might be, or city or just residents that might be caught up in a new regulation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Members, we do have some questions, and I know that there's maybe a person or two who want to testify, but I do want to point out that we are supposed to start making our way over for the State of the State address in short order, so to the extent that we could maybe limit further testimony or keep testimony short and questions short, that would be probably greatly appreciated for members who have guests that they're escorting over. Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative Westrom, it's kind of a curious timing for this bill today. Essentially, this is the legislature saying that they don't want the executive to have too much control over rulemaking and the ways in which it can affect people's lives without having the legislature approve it. Later today, we're going to be voting on a bill that tells the governor to find $100 million in cuts to make because the legislature doesn't want to do the work itself. And so I think we should be a little bit more consistent in addressing issues of legislative and executive authority. I might also cite the unallotment issue that came up last session, again, when certain people in the legislature didn't think that it had the authority, the sole authority, to make appropriations. They thought that the governor might be able to do that as well. So I actually oppose this bill. I think that we, with a part-time legislature, a citizen legislature, we do, by necessity, delegate authority to agencies. When they overstep their reasonable bounds, the legislature can always take action to pass laws to preempt those rules. And I hope that Governor Dayton makes the same rookie mistake that Governor Pawlenty did in 2003.
Thank you, Mr. Winkler. I know we do have at least one or two people that need to testify. Assistant Commissioner David Thornton, if you could testify, but perhaps keep your comments relatively short.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is David Thornton. I'm Assistant Commissioner at the Pollution Control Agency. Just wanted to let the committee members know that this bill does have broad implication about how agencies do their business. We've checked with the Department of Labor, Industry, Health, Admin, the Department of Transportation, Department of Education. That's the list that we've been able to get to in the last few days. And Mr. Meyer here from DNR is also able to add a few words, perhaps. A few things for the committee to think about, in addition to the fact that it will be affecting all departments and agencies in their rulemaking efforts. While a $10,000 threshold is a lot of money for an individual, it's not for a Fortune 500 corporation, and it might seem reasonable that there could be different thresholds that could apply in something like this. A lot of our rulemakings that we do here in the state, perhaps maybe even most of them, are adopted through non-controversial procedures, and that generally means that the department proposing the rule has gotten together all of the parties that are going to be affected by that rule and worked things out so that the rule that is being proposed is something that folks agree with or can implement and live with. So it would seem that to come in at the end of a process like that would be fairly wasteful of all the time that has gone in up front, and that perhaps non-controversial rules might be treated differently. There is an exemption for rules that are in this bill. There's an exemption for rules that are promulgated as a result of federal mandates or federal regulations, and I would just like to point out that for the most part, most of the rules that we at the PCA promulgate are done through that method. And so I don't know how many of our rulemakings this would actually impact. And then finally, there already exists in Chapter 3.8 a process for the legislature to get involved in rulemaking efforts up front. And our experience with that has been limited because the legislative Coordinating Commission has only intervened in one of the rulemakings that we've done in the past, but it was in a way that resulted in a significant change to the rule that we proposed. And so, in our experience, that process has worked, and perhaps it would be useful to test it out some more. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Did you need to comment too, Mr. Meyer?
Madam Chair, yes, just briefly, along with
Please state your name.
I'm sorry, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources.
Thank you.
The department does have some concerns dealing with this bill. We feel that the statement of need and reasonableness process with the ALJ The review there is the best place to have those costs determined, and it's part of that review that takes place. We're also concerned about the delay that this may cause us in rulemaking. We have a broad authority, a broad array of rulemaking that deals with anything from hunting and fishing, the number of fish you can take, or deer hunting seasons, to shoreline ordinances and other things. So if a rule is done in July, we'll have to wait for legislative approval. Trying to determine that impact, as Mr. Thornton said, on an entity, on an individual, may be impossible for some of the rules that we deal with. Also, on lines 2.4, the bill does exempt rules developed under 14.388, but we often deal with rules under 14.386, which are the exempt permanent rules, and also 14.388, the exempt permanent and the expedited permanent rulemaking processes we feel should be added to this exemption as well, Madam Chair. That's the basis of our comments on the bill.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Westrum, did you have any other witnesses, or can we proceed to a vote?
Madam Chair, knowing the shortness of time, unless members have specific questions, they don't need to testify. They are here in support of it.
Okay. Any questions for members? Okay. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Hancock renews his motion that House File 203 be recommended to pass as amended and sent to the General Register. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, signify by aye.
No.
The motion does prevail in the bill. House File 203 is recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.